Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Today is Tuesday, right? Yeah, I'm off all week. I don't know where my head's at. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, and Dennis Dick with you this morning. Today we are talking undervalued or, quote, low PE stocks and the rally in those undervalued stocks that we're looking at. We're talking buybacks versus dividends. We're talking Credit Suisse unloading the rest of their positions from Archegos and some ramifications from that for the bank. We're taking questions from our chat. So a good show for you today. Nick Shaheen is our guest, author of Create Income with Option Spreads and SellSpreads.com at 8:35. Everyone smash that like button. Let us know how much you like us in the eyes of the YouTube algorithm. Thank you very much. Joel, good morning. How are we doing out there?
A little bit of red, but I mean, you consider all that green we had yesterday. This is absolutely nothing. Relevant levels, pre-market high, 74.50. Yesterday's high, 73.75. So you're not getting me calling a double top here, but there is a double top. Crude up 92 cents at 59.58, trying to get back over that $60 level. Gold climbing back towards that major resistance at 1750. That's up 880 at 1736.70 or 3770. Silver, that's grappling with 25. That's up 22 cents, right at 25, right on the kisser. Bitcoin, that's down $300 at 59,500. I guess no one is too worried about China's version of the Bitcoin coming out, announced, I guess, overnight. But Triple D, that was one heck of a rally yesterday. I mean, opened up, took out the pre-market high, kept on going. So how is it looking in the after hours? Looks like we got a little reversal. Did that happen before you shut down at 8 o'clock?
It was up. We were up last night. So I was actually surprised that we'd given all of the gains back overnight. We were significantly in the red at one point overnight, but the buy the dippers win again. And here we are. We're almost flat on the S&Ps. We've got the QQQs trying to go positive. Actually, they just did right now, right here, live on Pre-Market Prep. The QQQ goes green once again. Buy the dip wins.
Let me see that. Say goodbye to 325. Look at that. Wow. Gap up on yesterday and then right over that 325. Wow, that, what a level. Don't you hate when it does that, when you have a level like that? Man. Look at that. Just leaped right over it. Now going back. Finally woke up. Apple finally woke up. Google, which we had been touting on the breakout, that was up huge. Facebook, they should, if they would have released everyone's phone number, they probably would have been up $20 instead of $8. But man, big tech finally towed the line for us in yesterday's session.
It's value. This is a value-driven market. Multiple questions. When will Fubo go up? Fubo is not a value stock. It is not a value tech stock. If you are high PE or no PE in the fact that you don't make money, you are not participating for the most part in this rally. We've seen some participation, but a lot of non-participation in the Cathy names. This has been a value-driven market. Look no further than running a scan this morning. Ran a scan, S&P 500, taking stocks with a PE under 20 in the S&P 500. There is 12, only 12. Again, this is based on last year's earnings. Some of last year's earnings are depressed, so I'm not using forward earnings, using last year's earnings. So if you do use those, though, you have 12 stocks of the 500 that have PE under 20. And let's take a look at them. Ben, the first one, Franklin Resources, that is making a new high on the year right now. We have BK, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. We have DHI, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. We have General Dynamics, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. Notice a pattern? We have Hewlett Packard, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. We have Lennar, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. We have MetLife, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. We have Oracle, which made a new 52-week high yesterday. Full disclosure, I do own Oracle in the long-term portfolio. PFG, which just missed a new 52-week high yesterday. Another home builder, PHM, new 52-week high yesterday. SHW, Sherwin-Williams, the paint company, new 52-week high yesterday. And Whirlpool, new 52-week high yesterday. So 11 out of 12, and the one that missed by 50 cents. You can clearly see that this market wants low PE stocks.
You know what? In funny, on a historical perspective, is that low? 15?
Not really.
No.
But again, this is based on last year's earnings. So looking forward, some of these PEs are probably lower than that because I ran the PE based on current right now. So it would take the last four quarters of earnings. As opposed to if you run it on a forward multiple, we know 2020 was a rough year for a lot of companies. So, you know, the home builder is probably firing all cylinders, but there's a couple companies in there that might not be. So I think, you know, you look forward, you're going to see some that are trading lower than that. I mean, General Motors going forward is trading looking at, you know, 10 or 11. So, you know, not based on last year because people, you know, in the middle of the pandemic were saving money. But I mean, going forward here, General Motors, you know, it's another low PE stock. If you look at it from a forward basis, I think it's trading 11 times looking forward. So, I mean, there is some cheap stocks in there, but you can clearly see the divergence continues to stay. Even what you were saying off the bat with, you know, looking at what was driving us yesterday, it was Apple with a good day. It was Facebook. We've been talking about Facebook. The PE is reasonable on it. Google. I've talked about Google forever. Growth at a reasonable cost.
What's Google at? Is it PE?
It's around $200 in the last 3 days. This is incredible movement. 22.18, Joel. So you've seen big movements. Full disclosure.
No. I'm just asking about the.
I'm long Google.
The PE.
I don't know where the PE is. Spencer, do you have that in front of you? It's under 30.
Yeah, we looked at this like a week ago.
I feel like it's in the 20s.
Well, it was under 30.
It's moving.
Whirlpool, someone's saying, what the hell is this up for? I mean, this is if you talk about obvious Adam and stuff, and people were not going on vacations, right? They were at their house. So if you have this vacation money, you're spending more time in your home. What are you going to do to your home? You got the money, you got the extra money, you got the extra time, so you're going to put it into a house. Interesting side fact, I was talking to my cousin Steffi over the weekend, and she's a building manager, or she's the manager for a city of a small town, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, and she said that building permits, when last year, for all kinds of projects, were like three times as high as they had in all in the previous 5 years. Yeah. So that's why your Home Depots, right? People are doing, stuff on it. Look at that. I mean, holy Matt, that looks like Viacom.
The one problem is here, if you're coming in and chasing these things now, you've kind of late to the party.
I should dump those.
I think you get pullbacks in these things, though they're buying opportunities. Just like General Motors. I'm kicking myself because the thing ran, if we look at the beginning of March, ran all the way up to 62, got overbought. What's it do? Has a nice little healthy correction. What's it do now? A resumption of the previous trend, and it's now banging its head up against the 52-week high. So I'm long GM. I've sold puts on GM. I actually want to be long more GM. I'm kicking myself that I didn't sell more puts or buy more stock in the 55-56 area. So I said the other day, it would not surprise me in the least if this EV story on GM continues. You can see a scenario that General Motors could go to $100. You can see that scenario out there where if the EV story gets hot and this thing's trading with a PE of 11 and it starts to become your major EV player. Like, think about General Motors. I'm saying on this show right now that General Motors will eventually be the number one, this is my prediction, the number one EV maker in the world. I think they will make the most, sell the most EV cars in the world.
How about I believe they GM will. Having a better day than Tesla yesterday?
Yep.
When Tesla announces the deliveries, and at 720, it never got there yesterday. I was hoping for it to a little bit lower risk short for it to get up to that 720. I never did, but ended up with a red candle. But yeah, GM is, yeah, exactly. GM.
Everybody hates that comment, but that's my opinion. I'm not saying I know anything. Nobody knows anything, but I'll bet on GM. And I've been betting on GM for a while.
Yeah.
So yep. I think they will be a major EV player. And I think they may eventually become the number one EV player. They obviously got some ground to make up on Tesla. Tesla's got a huge lead. They've done a lot of things right. If Tesla was trading at 25 or 30 times earnings, I would buy it. I would buy Tesla if it was 25 or 30 times earnings. It is not. What's the PE on Tesla, Mr. Israel? What's the PE? Even looking forward, go forward. Because they're making money, so we can do a PE on it. What's a PE on Tesla?
I will look it up for you. Forward PE. Oh, God.
How many digits
what is
in
it?
There?
What is it?
I'm seeing like 170.
170.
That's
so is Tesla 100 or 10 times better than General Motors? That's a question. Maybe it is. I don't think it is. That's why I continue to not own Tesla and I own General Motors.
There's more, you know, the eyeball test. There's a few more Teslas around. But still, like when I hear those delivery numbers, like over the weekend, like 185,000 cars. I'm like, okay, is that a lot of cars? I mean, if we did that, I mean, whatever. We could talk about
Toyota
it.
Toyota too. Somebody's saying Toyota can be a major player. You know what? Toyota pulling back here this morning. I like Toyota too. I think you buy the pullback in Toyota. So I think they're going to be a major EV player as well. I completely agree with the person who's saying that in the chat. I think Toyota is going to be a major player. Toyota has been sleepy for 5 years. You know what? Toyota is the kind of stock. I'm rating it down right now. I might buy some Toyota. I don't own any right now. It's down $3 this morning. Was there a headline on Toyota? Why is it down $3? Do we know? It's obviously traded
that's
over.
That's an all-time high for Toyota.
Well, it was. It's not now.
Well, I mean, not too.
It was close enough back in February. It's not far off.
They reported like everyone else reported March sales last week, but no.
Anyways, it's down $3 for some reason. I like the Toyota. I like this pullback on Toyota. I might be a buyer. I might put in the long term portfolio here because I'm thinking that these major automakers are all going to be major players in EV.
They have the infrastructure. You know, they have the infrastructure to do the. You know, they just need the. Technology to be able to do it,
have the technology to. Like I said before, you know, I told this story with my friend that works at an engineer at Chrysler, and when I was in school, this kid was a genius. So don't kid yourself. There are some very, very smart people that work at General Motors and Toyota and Chrysler and Ford. There are very smart people that work there. So are they as smart as Musk? Maybe not. Musk is a genius, the stuff that he's doing. But, you know, we see, you know, the SpaceX. Musk is all over the place, too, remember. You know, he's doing so much with SpaceX. I love SpaceX. Again, in the private market, so if you'd go to buy that, it's going to trade with probably a ridiculous multiple as well. But, I mean, if you're looking at Tesla as a space play, what happens when SpaceX comes public? It's going to come public eventually. Is Tesla still a space play then? Is Tesla still an Elon Musk play, or do they jump and gravitate over to that one? At the end of the day, Tesla's major source of income is cars. So, I mean, I've been talking against Tesla here all the way up, all the way, you know, down a little bit here. So I'm not saying the Tesla, you know, bubble is over, but I am saying that General Motors and Ford and maybe potentially Toyota are starting to come back and they're starting to become, you know, seen as potential EV players. People are talking about them in the media. People are talking about them. You know, everywhere as being EV players. And it's logic that they weren't just going to sit back and continue to make their gas guzzling cars. We're all going to be EV. 10 years, well, we're all going to be driving electric vehicles.
Did you see GM just announced that electric Hummer for $105,000? Right? It's electric Hummer. It's $105,000. It's got some feature, I guess, some like elevation feature that you can like go over obstacles. I looked at the
an ad of it, but I didn't click on it. So I just saw the picture.
It looks insane, but who's going to buy that?
It's a lot of money, but they're not all going to be $100,000 EVs. It's going to be $30,000 EVs. Right. You know, General Motors is going to have a lot of different choice. And so is Ford. I love the Ford F-150. If that thing goes electric, I'm probably going to buy one. So my Ford F-150, I'm hauling stuff around, you know, doing different things with that. I mean, I love my Ford F-150. And it goes electric? Sure. I'll trade mine in and go buy an EV one, because I think we all have to eventually. I think we're all going EV.
So, gee, how long have you had the one you had?
Well, I just keep turning them in. This one's like 2 years old. Yeah, I train, you know, every few years. I go a little while. I don't like to go every 3 years. They're really killing you. So I try to drive them. But I work on them, too. I mean, I'm doing different stuff with them. So, you know, you're moving, pulling trailers, pulling my boat. You're doing different things with them. So I make them work. I don't have to sit back looking at it. I use a pickup. Right. I'm up here in the bush, Joel.
Yeah, I know.
I was in the bush until this excavator outside my house doing a little bit of damage to the bush, but that's another story. So,
all right.
We don't want to upset the tree lovers, so we won't talk too much about that. I love trees as well. We want to save as many trees as possible.
Boy, we are getting some heat for the GM. I hope Raz isn't listening. We'll get fired for talking.
They don't like it. No, everybody likes Tesla. They don't like
John. Yeah. You know, and also I was just, you mentioned like space and stuff. When are you dipping your toe back in space, Virgin Galactic, man?
Okay, so Fubo, space, all these stocks are the same thing. I'm out of them all. I'm going to jump back in when growth starts to come back into favor. It's showing me nothing. Like, I'm not seeing anything, Joel, of any love for anything that's not making money. You're seeing the same story. Look at the stocks that did not participate in yesterday's rally. Bunch of SPACs, space, Fubo. If you look and your company's not making money, it probably didn't participate. Well, CCIV, which is, you know, everybody's been talking about, obviously, you know, as a huge EV play. I mean, it's not participating either here. Big rally in the markets. Q's up. Markets making new all-time highs. That stock just sits there and does nothing. Still hated. I still say, you know, if you were looking at it, you do have a level to lean on. But the longer it sits down here, I thought maybe it gets a little bit of life in the last couple of days. It's not getting life when the markets rally. Now, if you get this reversal where they start selling value, maybe they're going to jump back into these growth. I think you can still have a few of these stocks. Don't sell all. I would not sell all of my growth names. I would not sell all of my, if you've got a few higher PE stuff in there, you got to have a little bit of that. You know, the Cramer barbell approach, it's a good way to go about it. But if you're sitting with all EV, all growth, all SPAC, you're looking at this rally and you're like, why am I not making money? Why is my account not at all-time highs? If you're sitting diversified, your account probably is making new all-time highs. So, I mean, that's the point that I've talked about on this show for a decade. It depends what you want to do. You want to get rich overnight? You go all in on one stock and you hope you hit it. You know, you want to get rich overnight at the casino? You bet it all on red and you hope you hit. I mean, I'm not in the game to hope. This is my business. This is how I make my livelihood. This is how I pay my bills. This is my only main source of income is my trading. I cannot just be taking, you know, gambles and going all in.
No.
My all in bet is probably like 5% of my overall.
Yeah,
work.
Why? Why
really, really, like really, really, you know, wanted to own a stock. You know, maybe I would get, you know, 5% of my net worth in there. Tops, you know, because I want to stay diversified. I've safety preservation of capital has always been, you know, what I know I'm all about. So,
yeah, Triple D, one stock that hasn't left a station yet, and I don't know if it ever will. What about AT&T?
I've said I don't know long term if the dividend is safe. They're saying that. I'm not sure if the dividend is safe. The dividend is safe in the short term. It is safe in the short term. I'm just trying to like envision, you know.
I think they go X this week, doesn't it? Doesn't it go X this week?
Yeah, it looks good. On the chart, it looks pretty good. We've washed out. It's a value name. It's got a nice dividend, 6.77. It does trade like a bond, though, and that holds it back to a certain extent because there is no growth there. You know, it's all about the 6.77% dividend. So if interest rates are going up, that does not help that stock to a certain extent. But you know what? The chart's kind of sleepy. I think AT&T, I could get talked into a trade in AT&T, not an investment,
Joel,
but a trade.
Goes X on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back. So I could get talked into a trade on this. You want to talk me into it? Stop yourself out below that 29.50 area. you're buying a 37, you're risking a buck and a half, and you're saying maybe you could get some life up to 35, 36 bucks.
What about that guy I was already ready to go to 45?
Who was in there? Was that
Nelson Peltz or something?
I don't know if it's Peltz.
No, it wasn't.
Who was in there?
It was
somebody with an N.
No. I think it was Einhorn.
No, was it Einhorn?
Was Einhorn in there?
No, it wasn't.
Anyways, there was somebody in there, Joel. I can't remember either. Maybe the chat got our back. We have a very smart chat. Yeah, the chat's very smart. I don't know, man. What do you think, AT&T?
I like it here.
It was Elliot. I'm sorry.
Elliot was in there.
I was close with the E.
Are they still in there or they're out?
No.
Nelson Elliot.
No.
Yeah, that was it. I don't know. That Verizon, right. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I look at that, you know, that yield is, I mean, if you keep an eye on it, you know, and if they cut the dividend, then you're toast. Then there's really not much you can do.
That's imminent.
But you know what? They're going to make that HBO Time Warner. Isn't that Kong versus Godzilla movie? Isn't that Time Warner, which is now HBO, which is AT&T? Yeah. I mean, they haven't even got, they're a media stock too. They haven't even gotten any love on, you know, on the media end. So I mean, you know me, I'm concerned. I mean, that kind of dividend to me is just irresistible. But
do you own it?
I own it. Yep. Yep.
I've given hate for AT&T for a long time on this show. Today, I'll officially say I don't hate AT&T anymore. I'm not long it. I could actually get behind it. Not long term though. I don't know about long term. As a trade right now, I kind of like it. Okay. Just as a trade, because I think 5 years from now, I think AT&T could struggle.
It's going to be at 30.
It could be lower. I think 5 years from now, they might have to cut that dividend. I think 3 years from now, I just think they're in a lot of businesses that are just they made bad business decisions. You know, and I've said before, this could be the next General Electric. It hasn't materialized. I said this over the last year. It hasn't materialized, which is good news. And they have started to turn around some of that stuff. But I mean, DirecTV, they're trying to do the right things. They're trying to get rid of DirecTV, salvage some value for it.
Buying things.
They got to quit buying bad things, Joel. They need to find.
You know that goes back, and I'm trying to find the article, but you know that goes all the way back, like to the 90s with AT&T buying poor. They bought NCR. This is back even before you started it, Bright. They were like, we're going into mainframes.
They love buying stuff.
They went into
at the tops. At the tops.
When AT&T
buys a business, you know, you look in the sector and that's usually the top. They love buying it.
Remember for the DirecTV, they paid $49 billion in 2015 and they just unloaded it last year for $16 billion. So
that's not a good
trade. What did they pay?
$49
billion. They unloaded for $16.
Yeah.
That's not a great investment. But at least they got 16. I can't believe they got 16 for it. I thought it was like basically not worth anything. I know, kind of. I mean, DirecTV, whatever. It's cool and everything, but we're streaming. Yeah. So world is
going streaming. Not streaming. We stream.
Nick Shaheen has thoughts on AT&T. We'll have to get his thoughts when he comes on in 10 minutes.
And people are saying covered calls, buying it right in covered calls. That's a great strategy. I just don't know
how much juice.
Enhance the yield. I don't know how much juice is in there either, so you got to price it out. But you could probably enhance it by, I bet you could enhance it by 10%. I bet you could.
Yeah, and you know, if you really wanted to be like super conservative, you could buy the stock, sell the calls, and then buy some puts underneath. And then if the thing, you know, so you're protected somewhat, right? And if it just stays there and goes nowhere, then 7%, cha-ching, 7%, cha-ching. I mean, who's going to complain about that?
Usually the Arabs will have that priced in with the put call parity so that they're going to be probably paying 7% to put that on. So you get nothing. they're good, Joel. No free lunch out there. I'd love to be able to hedge myself completely and just extract 7% risk-free from this market. I actually would go all in if I could do that.
have you heard anything about structured products at all that some of these banks are putting out? I'll have to, you're getting some pretty good yields on some things like Ford and some big companies. Have you, they come across here?
No, we'll talk.
It'll bore people here.
I've heard about Bitcoin structured products. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. Okay. Yeah,
I still get you talked into Ethereum, too.
I've also heard about Cathie Wood structured products that basically do the same thing, but charge more fees. Joel was talking about AT&T's dividend being safe. You know whose dividend is not safe?
Who?
Credit Suisse. You know why? Because they said so.
Did they
cut it?
They've proposed a cut among several other things.
Is this all because of Wang? Is this
how
all
can you
because
that, of that guy? How
one
could
person?
You?
One customer?
So
holy.
They were out shopping some more blocks last night here. In I guess the main three stocks that they have exposure to, which is Viacom.
Why would you do that, Dennis?
Viacom.
Why would you do what?
Farfetch. Shop it, man. That just
there you go. How you gotta get out, Joel? Yeah. They gotta get out.
Yeah.
Why were they not shopping it last week is the question.
So remember that we talked about this, was it Friday? I think it was, or no, Thursday? It may have been Thursday that Joel Kalina from Wedbush dropped Joel and I a note. Basically, I'm hearing that there's more pain to come. Well, they were offering 34 million shares of Viacom after the close and 14 million shares of Vips and 11 million shares of Farfetch after the close. So they're out this morning, Credit Suisse, saying that they're going to take a hit of $4.7 billion on this.
Man.
After like a year and a half of earnings. Chief Risk Officer
gone.
Is out. Head of Investment Banking is out.
Gone.
Proposed a dividend cut. All sorts of things. But, yeah.
How could you not see that sitting on your books? How could you not see
that
you had that kind of exposure? Back.
Well, part of it has to do with the use of swaps, which sort of disguise it. But
and then you're shopping to the street. Oh, I got stock to sell. Oh, please let me out. Let me out. They're probably like, yeah, we're 35 bid. Come and get me. You know, selling ahead of it. Boy, oh boy.
As soon as that was going around last night, that CS note came after the bell. They start hammering VIAC. They start hammering VIPs, and they start hammering. FTCH, the pricing range that they threw out on the note wasn't that low. So they're shopping at a, just like a buck or two down from the close on these things. But I mean, again, where are they going to find the buyers for, this big block? So we don't know the pricing yet of these. Hopefully they're going to get them done. Hopefully they get past this, like get these off the books and let's move on. But man, like you got to start talking about risk control in these brokers. I mean, look at Goldman, what they do right. I mean, this is why Goldman is Goldman. They're sitting back. They don't play games on this thing. They look at this thing.
They get out.
These guys got risk. We liquidate them. We clear a Goldman. I was doing stuff like that, they're going to look at my portfolio and they're going to liquidate me.
Well, they can't figure out what the hell you're doing.
Kind of risk. Okay, yeah.
They're just scratching their head. But this is unconfirmed, but I heard Credit Suisse is changing their name to Debit Suisse.
Oh, my God. No. Actually, you know what? No, you know what?
Dennis laughs. Dennis laughs. Thank you, Dennis.
He's pretty good. And once in a while, this guy comes.
That was a good one. I bet you I get four LOLs out of the chat coming up soon. It probably hasn't hit them yet. Yep. Happy Muhammad says, ha, ha, ha. There we go. Luke Jacoby. Luke's got my back.
Luke gets them along.
Joey, look at these people.
We got Hot Stocks Luke in the chat right now.
Can we? Angus
is in there. It says Joel's the best.
Look at that. Look at that. I'm just going to go retire. Yeah.
Jeffrey, Stefan, Marshall's in there.
I give you the last
one. And Powell's in there.
Pump and Powell.
Corey. And I'm sorry we missed a few. You guys are all awesome. We love you guys. It's chat rocks.
Yeah.
We have the best chat. Nick's the best chat on the show.
He laughed. Hey, you know what? If you laughed at that, smash the like button. That's that joke.
Nick's dying to come on here, man.
He's in the background. He's backstage right now. Just let me in. I'm going to get that triple D.
If not, he can get you on Twitter. So
he can get me on Twitter.
Oh, right, stocks.
We had a deal, actually. We had a SPAC deal this morning. Muds. Getting out of the mud. Muds.
All right. MUDS is your ticker for the SPAC. They're buying the Tops company.
That's the top.
Tops as the baseball cards is what you know them as. I'm going to trade on the NASDAQ under the ticker TOPP. I would imagine they're trying to sell this as some sort of a part NFT play.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But I don't really know the play other than that because, baseball card, I don't know. This one is beyond me, guys. This is beyond me.
So this was announced on CNBC, Andrew Ross Sorkin, actually, I don't know if he's breaking the deal, but he was really quick on it. And Joe Kernan's in the background saying, this is an NFT play. Yep, this is an NFT play. And every time Joe Kernan said it was an NFT play, this thing went higher and higher. This thing went all the way up to like $12.30 in about a minute. And again, same story that we see in the SPACs again and again and again, is that the pops on the acquisition announcements are quickly faded. This was faded 5 minutes later. It had given back the majority of those gains. So if you're chasing these things up 15, 20% on a deal announcement, that was working really well 2 months ago. It is not working well right now. And if you're buying this thing at 11, 11.50, 12, saying, another NFT deal, it's not so good now. The 10.55, it's still okay if you owned it at 9.92, though.
The chairman of the board is going to be Michael Eisner from Disney.
Really? This is a lot of good things here. But...
why would you do that?
It's a SPAC. SPACs are hated. I don't know. Joel, what are you doing? You jumping in and getting in some tops?
I am. Well, first of all, who picked out like the symbol MUDs? I mean, come on.
Well, you know, it's going to become tops.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
The SPAC is called Mudrick Capital, so it makes sense.
Okay.
Was MUD gone? Let's see if MUD is there. Oh, yeah, he could have just got mud. He didn't need to put the S.
Yeah, I mean, Eisner, I mean, that makes me, you know, a little bit interested. But like I told you guys, I am batting 100% in my SPAC investments, okay? I have made no money, and I've lost no money. So you guys are, you know, let them become real companies. You were crazy for a while. I was a little worried about you.
I had like 30 of those things at one time.
Hey, I can't believe you have 30 of those things.
I think I did. I was diversified in the pre-deals. They were working so well.
Diversification.
Diversification. The pre-deals. They were working so well. That SNPR. I had some gap up 100%. I was like, boom, boom. I'm like,
you killed the SPACs, Dennis.
Yeah, I know. I was the one that was buying them all pre-merger. And I'm like, I just sell them on the deal announcement. Sell them on the deal announcement. I'm out there selling 10 minutes after the deal announcement. And now they're not getting any pop at all. I got like three or four left. I do have a few left, but not very many left now. So I cut a few of them for small losses. Because really, though, and Mitch is right. Is Mitch there? I wasn't buying these things at 12 on the 10. $10.
You can't lose at 10.
If you do a bad deal, you can lose at 10, but you're not losing much. So all the ones I own, I'm barely down in because I bought most of them around $10. So I have a couple I paid up. I paid up on that LFTR one, and I've paid up around like $10.60. So I am down on a few of these things, and you're hoping you're going to get a good deal. You know, but like some of those were crypto. LFTR is like supposedly, you know, from Catchy, looking for crypto targets. So I was like, well, that could be good. So, you know, you're trying to play the story of the SPAC behind it. I was looking at one management teams, which is why, you know, I had the Pershing Square. I had that one forever, but then it just got silly and then they started to implode them. I'm like, okay, I got to get out. And then the Goldman Sachs one I've always liked too, GSAH, it's back down here. I've never actually pulled the trigger on it. I never did buy it, 1048. But I mean, these are ones with good management teams. So you look at management team and then you look at the story, the potential for a story. So, but even on the good ones, they haven't had, you know, the love that they were getting 2 months ago, which makes me not want to own very many of these things.
Hey, Dennis, diversification doesn't mean taking a small loss in a bunch of different stocks, okay?
Well, it's better than taking one massive loss.
That's true.
Dennis, what is your definition of a small loss, maybe in percent terms?
It depends. On a day trade?
Yeah,
a small loss is like 0.01%. I don't want to be down on my day trades. I'm going with momentum. I'm going with flow. I stop myself out. Believe me, I try to stop myself out when I get down like more than a quarter of a percent on some of these trades. Not on Tesla, but on something like, you know, a smaller. I try to stop myself out quickly. On a swing trade, 3%, maybe 4%. You got to give yourself a little wiggle room, but not a lot. I'm not losing 10% on stuff. And long-term investing, I'm all over the place. I'm holding stuff. I have some massive losers. I probably should cut them. Sometimes I do cut them. Sometimes, you know, I hold on to them. But, you know, I'm holding stuff for big gains so you can take some bigger losses. So long-term investing is a completely different animal. I try to approach it with a different style. I don't know if it's good or not. But my trading, my swing trading, I don't want to lose more than 3 or 4% on a swing trade, really. And on my day trading, I try to lose fractions of a percent only. So that's our small losses.
Let's bring on our guest here, Nick Shaheen, author of Create Income with Option Spreads and SellSpreads.com. Nick, good morning.
Good morning to you. Great show, guys. Great show. I was laughing. I did laugh, Joel. I did laugh.
Which one? He gave multiple jokes, Nick.
The one with the bad juju, something about Credit Suisse to debit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was good.
That was some bad juju there, but that was pretty funny.
I can't laugh at my own jokes. That's not politically correct. So, Nick, what do you think? Value, 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 and more value, and value, and value, and more value.
What's value? I mean, I know the experts used to refer to the small caps as value. We're rolling out of growth, meaning the NASDAQ, into value, but that's not the case anymore. So now it's all about the FANGs yesterday, the big guys, the giga caps that had been sleeping and they caught a bid. So they kind of moved the indices.
Yeah.
So I struggled with, first of all, when you said Sorkin's name, I almost threw up a little bit. I haven't watched CNBC all year. That was like my New Year's resolution, and I completely forgot about all of their names.
New Year's resolution.
It was like the best,
we love you, Nick.
the best thing ever. So it's all been about ignoring the rhetoric. I actually had a debate with somebody, supposedly a good trader, who said this was a bearish market. And I was like, what are you talking about? We just set new all-time highs hours before that. But his perception was that it was a bearish market. He was so engrossed in the news and what could go wrong, what could implode, what happened last time we had this set of... I said, how are you fighting $3.5 trillion of cash pouring into the economy, unearned cash, just poof, landing in our laps? What are you shorting? And that was when the markets hadn't made the new highs. On the 26th, I think, I said, I'm buying the SPX because the SPY is going to 403.90. And this is what happened. The trade was buy an SPX trade, whatever you want. Sell a credit put spread, buy a debit call spread, do what you want. We're going up into the 400s. And that's what happened. And so everybody's engrossed as to what could happen. And last time we had the stars and moons aligned the same way, bad things happen. Just trade what's in front of you. Like you mentioned AT&T, and you mentioned that you would be interested. So there was a couple of failures that you can trade against. So on the 12th, the high of the 12th, whatever that was, 1387, that would be a trigger higher. So if they break above that, momentum traders might try to get to 3150, where it kind of failed big time there. That would be your second leg. So if you wanted to get long free, you would sell the put for May. Long. Yeah, so you would sell the 29 put for May. I think it was like 40 cents. Mm-hmm. You would buy the 31 call for May, which was about the same price. So there you go. You're long with no money out of pocket. Your worst case scenario is you end up buying the shares at 29. Then you can turn around and flip them however you want with your stops.
The downside with that is you don't get the dividend. That's the unfortunate part.
But you said you wanted to trade it.
Yeah, right? For the dividend. But well, yeah, it's an interesting. But, if you just think it's going like to 35 value names, Nick's getting setting up a nice trade. If you're not interested in the dividend, you just think this thing can move from 31 to 35 because we're all of a sudden, you know, all into value. I mean, that's a way to play it with little risk.
So the trade is you buy the rip above the 312 fail, or you buy the dip into the 29 point, the 30 support. So 30 is the point of control on a daily chart. So that's where it was busiest. So it's going to find support. There's a cluster of support between 30 and 29.6 thereabouts. So if it dips into that, that would be your start of your swing trade. You buy the shares. If it doesn't, you buy the shares above the breakout I told you from, which is like right there. It's not that far. That's the trade on AT&T, just purely on charts.
What, give us another couple of ideas here that you're looking at, Nick. Like you were talking FANG taking off. You can clearly see, you know, that when we were just talking high P versus low P earlier on the show, you can clearly see the divergence where this is like low PE stocks, or at least reasonable PE stocks, are definitely in favor right now.
Well, it's businesses, you know, as opposed to hopium. When the stock price is good. When the stock price is purely hopium, it's hard to defend it and argue for it when everybody's worried about stuff. But when you have an actual number to shoot against, like a price to sales, if it's a growth company or if it's a PE or something, then sure. Like Facebook, there was a setup last week on a breakout from the highs in September. It took a while to get back there. But throughout this, you know, uneasy period of the last couple of weeks, it held up better than the rest. So I had the trigger that if it makes a high, then it's open air, so you can ride it higher. And then on over the weekend, guys and gals from the chat room were saying, "Oh my God, it's going to be a bloodbath on Monday from
because
Facebook.
Of Barron's?
Because of something leaked of whatever."
Oh yeah, the, they should have leaked
said,
more.
I thought to myself, we never learned that these don't matter. Because the U.S. user base is a fraction, a tiny fraction of the Facebook customers. Facebook's money is in the eyeballs, and it's all over the world. We are just a tiny speck of it. So, yes, the advertisers are here, but they're tailoring to the people that are watching, and the eyeballs are the actual asset. So it doesn't matter what we think here in the U.S. So there you go. It made a high. So it's in a breakout. If it revisits the base of just under 300, it's normal because it's just revisiting the breakout zone. But I wouldn't fade it. And if the markets continue on higher, this one would be leading it. I wouldn't chase Apple just because of what I'm seeing in the open interest. There's just a lot of muck to go through if it wants to rally, although it had a good day. So there are better names to chase.
And Apple's one, like if you look at FANG, you've got Facebook making new highs. You've got Netflix. Netflix kind of in the gutter, but Google making new highs.
Right.
Apple's definitely underperformed to a certain extent, at least from some of the other FANG names.
So last week, also on the 31st, I issued an AMD long, and that was before it popped, just because I wanted to get long a chip. And everybody was worried about the chip sector, chip shortage, blah, blah, blah. And I looked at AMD and NVIDIA. I was equally excited about both. And then I looked at AMD. I used the market structure edge tool. I believe you guys have Tim on your show.
Yes.
So to evaluate both, and AMD was at a one as far as sentiment. So it had no love. So I chose it. And it paid, it paid really well. And the next leg of that, if it can break out of the resistance zone, it's at resistance right here. It has more into 84.80, but if it can clear that, maybe it can gain a little momentum.
Nick, look at the all time high, a break, a lower high, a break, a lower high, a break, a lower high at AMD.
Yes, but here's the problem with AMD. So it built a beautiful house up there. But now it's looking like, but look at what it built it on. It's one stick on the left hand side with two giant gaps, and it's like a complex head and shoulder. I think the experts call it. Two humps on the left, one big hump in the middle, one hump on the right, and one hump forming. So you stop out immediately after 74. Because
you got it, baby. That is a level.
You do not want to ride it. You do not want to find out where the support is
after 74. And it looks like a slippery slope down to 60.
And then you load up at like 62 minus.
I'll bid 60.01 right now. I should just write the put. You're right. If you think 60, I want to just. What can I get any premium for the 60 puts, or it's just too low?
Here, write the put when it's falling hard.
Okay, wait to write the put.
Right, because then you'll get everybody better panicking. Premium. I sold AMD puts at $20 during the pandemic. I got $2.20 for it.
It's a pretty good sell.
Yeah, and then I did it twice. I did it one at 22 and one at 20.
Hey, what's going on in the GameStop options? I know you.
I don't know. I don't know. I got sick of watching it, so I bailed.
That's exactly what Dennis said. It took up too much of his time. Yeah, exactly.
I can't look at it. It just wastes your time.
Wait. I looked at GameStop, and their business actually has numbers. It's not like it's a fake company. So they actually have – it's just the business, not exciting. But, you know, it's like price to sales is like 2. So it's not like completely junk.
Ludicrous.
Yeah. Yeah, but I have not looked at it. I I've been trying to, you know, I was long Tesla and NIO when everybody was freaking out. It wasn't easy, but I eked out a profit. I closed some NIO yesterday. I was long ARK K via credit put spread last week at 118. That got tested really hard, but I stood my ground and it worked out okay.
What do you think of Tesla now? What are you doing with your Tesla?
Nothing. I had the last one I had was a credit put spread, a bull put spread, and I closed it for greens. Like I bought it back for pennies. I sold it when people were freaking out. So usually you get if you get a buck and then it comes down to like 12, 14 cents, you just buy it back. It's silly to keep cheap risk open.
So you've sold into this rally.
I did sell into it. I sold some just before it, and I didn't get shaken out. So that's the trick, is where do you draw the line? So if a stock falls in panic and I have a long position, before I bail based on my parameters of stop loss percentage, like you mentioned, by the way, I love the way you said that you stop at 2-3% or a fraction, depends on the type of trade you are. So that's like the futures traders mentality, which most retail traders lack. But when I look at the chart and I see it falling into a prior support zone, I don't bail out of it. I see what happens. Then I stop myself out of that. So I sometimes break my own rule to get information from the outside factors.
Wow, we all break rules.
Right? Otherwise, we'd be perfect.
I broke rules when I was a little kid all my life. So you got your rules, and sometimes you just stretch them a little bit, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'm breaking them.
I've also made mistakes, like flat out mistakes, and like, what was I thinking? Like one day I forgot I had something expiring that day. It was a zero. It was like a intraday trade, and I completely forgot it was open, and it was a winner, and then it turned out to be a complete blowout. I was like, oh well, that was like two Fridays ago. So
we all make mistakes.
Note to self, don't be in the chat room when you're day trading.
Or don't do live shows when you're trading as well.
So,
you lose your train of thought in a hurry. It's like, oh, something's going on.
So during the Tizzy, we looked at the FANGs to see if we could do some trades. I think Netflix was one that we did trades on, but mainly the S&P. Yeah, what's up?
I was going to just ask, any other trades on your radar for the week?
So as you know, I write for you folks a lot. And, so I'm always scratching, like yesterday, I owed somebody a trade write up and I was like, what? There's nothing. I couldn't find something of value that's falling into a level to where I say, okay, I can get long behind. So I shared a, portfolio balance trade of sorts. So selling a bear call spread in an index like the SPX. The reason I chose the SPX is because it's cash settled, so there's no early assignments or anything like that. So it was an easy write-up that fits anybody's portfolio that has bullish positions and nothing but bullish positions. Instead of buying VIX to protect yourself or buying puts to protect yourself, you can collect money out in time, way above current price, like at the 4,220 at the SPX for May, for example, would work. And you know, the statistics. Theoretical success is in the mid 80s, and the payout would be the yield is about 25%. So not a bad way to balance a portfolio. So that was the most recent share, and I keep looking for good companies that are falling on bad times, and the chart says, okay, it's into support, to see if we can catch a swing trade or if it has a trigger, or just cash generation by selling put spreads below support.
Yeah, I should note that Nick is the author of the Benzinga Options newsletter. The link is it's up on the screen, but it's also in the chat, and that's clickable. If you hop on over, I just posted it in there. I'll post it again here, but that's the link to Nick's Benzinga Options letter that he is the author of and sends out. What is it weekly? I don't even...
It's every day almost. It depends on what you choose. You can be three times a week. You can be one time every 2 weeks. You can be once a week. It depends on what you want to get involved with. But the concept is to have a system, and the concept is to be able to book a profit early and leave money on the table. So if I'll give you an example. So statistically, the trades I shared, I think it was like 140 or something like that. I looked back and tried to tabulate it. If somebody booked their profits of around 15%, they had more than 83% success ratio. If somebody did nothing but credit put spread, they had more like than 95% success ratio. The difference is the return on credit put spreads is an average of about 15%, which in my book is aces, because these are the boring at base hits trades that I can make a living on forever and ever and ever. Yeah. And if you caught the breakouts that we've had by buying upside hope, the success is bigger. So the percentage amount, like if I won, I won 25 to 30% versus the average 15%. But I needed to time it. Whereas with the credit put spread, if I chose good entries and good levels, I didn't need to time it.
So there's a link up again. It's also on the screen. It's in the chat. Nick's Benzinga Options Letter. Nick Shaheen joins us every other Tuesday to talk options with us. Nick, we always appreciate it. Thanks a lot. We'll check back with you in a couple of weeks.
Great show. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks, Nick.
There's a bunch of tickers flying in chat that I want to get to here. Somebody mentioned Romeo Power. There was like a contract this morning. They signed an agreement, a long-term supply agreement for some batteries.
Ooh, like. Pop. Yep.
So yeah, the deal was with I guess Picard, PCAR. That was who the agreement is with, for the manufacturing of batteries. So RMO, there's your headline this morning.
This is what you got to look at in this stock. It's been pretty volatile. You just failed under 920 here. I wasn't looking at the pre-market chart. So what I don't like is that you hit a 918 high and then someone's still trying to wiggle out here because of the 15-minute brackets, the high has come down. So if you're looking for this like this great runner trade today and get back all these losses, you just want to see a blow through 920. Just go through it, boom, open up $9, 920, 930, 940, 950.
Well, then you're
around 10. Yeah.
It'll be a brick wall at 10.
Yeah. And then you got a gap up to 10, 11. So a lot of people that have been buying the short term might be looking at that. But Paramount, take out that pre-market high and keep on going. If not, you got a fade on your hands.
Everybody is buried in the stock. There are so many bag holders in this stock that it's going to struggle to rally at all.
Unless you bought it yesterday,
I'd be selling it this morning. I mean, you could get through your 920 level. Is there room to 10? Is it oversold? It's possible, but there's all the path of least resistance. People don't want to hear this. The path of least resistance for this stock is still lower because there's just so much overhead supply. Every single person that has bought this stock,
oh, get it back
is
to
15. Down money.
Please
give me back to 10. Please give me back to... There's so many people at 10. Think about everybody who bought it pre-SPAC at 10, and now they just want their money back. So there'll be a wall of sellers at 10. If it got up near 10, I would probably be trying to short it if it got near 10.
I mean, the only thing is there a big short? I don't know. There's not big short interest in these things, right? I mean,
I don't think it's huge.
Yeah. I mean, that would be the only thing. Or else if you get if you get a fund, it's like, oh, we got some news here. Everyone's buried. You know, let's just jump on it. But I don't see that until it takes out that pre-market high.
So tough. I mean, these are the opposite. So this is a hard lesson for everyone who's just been living the bull market. But when stocks are making new lows, I always say you got to go. And it is so hard when you have so many people who are stuck in something. It is so hard to really get those stocks to come back because there is just overhead supply, something fierce. Like this is the maximum overhead supply when stocks are up. The stocks are at all-time lows. We get a nice pop. There are people so excited today. Is this the turnaround story? Is that my Romeo Power finally going to go? You got 12% here. That's pretty good. I mean, that's a pretty good pop for a stock that's, you know, been ugly for a long time. Could it go to 10? A stock can do anything. There is probably room to 10, but above 10 is going to be really tough. And I don't even think it's already fading, like you said, Joel. We got to get to 920. If I was in this thing, I'd be selling it. That's just my opinion.
All right. I'm sorry, Joel. Were you done?
Yeah, I was a lot of time on Romeo Power. Right,
we got to talk about Ebang, EBON here. The score back in town. Hindenburg out this morning.
Oh, Hindenburg.
This was about 10 minutes ago now. Calling Ebang yet another crypto China hustle, and calling the whole thing a fraud, basically.
Wow. I don't know what's a fraud and what's not a fraud.
You can never tell these days.
Does good research.
People are already stuck.
No comments. I'm not buying it. I'll tell you that much.
Maybe if you're looking for, I'm just going to give this just bait. I mean, you do have some lows here. You have one low at 542 and then the next low at 483. So with these, when these hit pieces come out, if they don't rebound pretty quickly, then a lot of times they don't rebound. And we'll see what this one does today. But I see that low at 542, and you haven't hit that yet, but it kind of looks like you're going there. And then the next low is at 483.
What was their last report? Was on Ride, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, Ride.
Ride has never come back.
That was on, when was that? That was on March 12th.
These stocks, anything that was a SPAC and then any company that's still a concept and not actually making money is hated by this market.
What about turnaround? Clover, too?
You need to get the sentiment towards these names change. The market, like we've been saying for a while here now, has turned from growth to value. These are growth. These aren't even PE stocks because they don't have a PE. They don't have anything. They don't even have revenue.
They don't even have earnings. Yeah.
They don't even have revenue. I mean, there's still pre-revenue some of these companies. There's no Space and Ride.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough.
What about Amazon, Dennis? What about Amazon?
Yeah, that's always the argument.
No, but Amazon, and we know Amazon makes money, and Amazon is your biggest retailer, and Amazon is price to sales isn't crazy. You can look and say, okay, well, it's trading, 80 times earnings or something like that? But Amazon always reinvests themselves for growth. And if they wanted to make more money on the bottom line, they could. They're just smart enough. They don't like paying tax, and they figure out how to go. It's 77 times. You can say that's crazy, but with the sales that they have, you know, with the growth in the businesses that they're in, if they wanted to start to make more money on the bottom line, they could. They just keep reinvesting. So we had, who was it? It was Michael Pachter arguing that back when the stock was $500. Remember we had him on the show when Amazon was $500 or $600. And he said, if Amazon wanted to make $20 or $30 a share,
they could.
But he's like, they continue to invest for growth. So you can't look at Amazon and say, oh, it's nuts at 77 times. Let's think about this. This is your biggest online, retailer. And it's going to remain your biggest online retailer probably for a long time. So right. I just don't see this as this. People say it's crazy, crazy multiple. It's not as crazy as you think.
Right. No, but Joel's point, though, is that people always held up Amazon as, look, company with no earnings, and they do just fine. But your point is that they chose to have no earnings.
They chose to have no earnings. It's a difference. And that was what the enlightening. That's when, I've been bullish Amazon for a while. Like, I believe it was Michael Pachter. You can learn a lot from Michael Pachter.
All right, I'm gonna get him on again.
He's just fabulous. And back when I think it was him on the show. We're going back like 4 or 5 years ago, and Amazon was like $500 or $600. I can remember him saying they could make $20 or $30 a share right now.
Was it Michael or was it Gene?
No, I think it was Michael. Gene's been bullish Amazon forever too, though.
I don't know how Dennis remembers in a conversation from 5 years ago, but
certain things I can remember. I think it was Michael Pachter. Gene's been all over this too, though. So prof to Gene as well.
Yeah. Okay, let's do a couple more here. Someone asked about QuantumScape, QS, another former SPAC. Right.
What are you thinking?
Right.
Had that gap up. It's not holding. I don't like this chart. I'll just give you, what do you have? You had the low of the move at 41.75. High of the move, so that's about 11, 5.5. It has a hold in 46, 47. That's where I'm looking.
Kramer has been trying to pump this back up too. And if this takes out 40, if the 40 is the line in the sand, and we were talking this a few days ago, and it was like 43 or 44. We're like, 40 is your line in the sand.
40, 50,
takes out $40, it could be at 20. So you want to make sure, if you're long this thing, if you want to play it, that, we're going to turn around and start buying, all this growth and no earning stocks again, which it doesn't look like we're doing that anytime soon. Your line in the sand has got to be 40 on this. So if you're long at 48, I would stop myself up below 40. I am not touching this. I think it goes lower.
Is it this Gates? Isn't Gates in this one big? Is this the Gates one or
not? I don't
know.
Yes. Correct me if I'm wrong, chat, but
how did this thing get to 132.73? Holy mackerel. Wow.
These people didn't care anything about anything. They just were, it was all hot potato game. You're just buying stocks because you think there's going to be another buyer to pay more money. And you're just throwing out, you know, ridiculous numbers on everything. And that's all come, it's all changed. That's all changed. And Reddit changed. Reddit honestly changed a lot of this. Reddit helped, you know, because again, like I said, they pick on value names. They were looking, actually doing some fundamental research. We give some Reddit traders the heat. I know they all hated me, you know, when I said, I don't even remember what I said. And I had like 2,000 negative comments on Reddit about me. I can't remember.
3,000.
I said 3, they weren't having as much influence as they were before, which was probably true. But they weren't. But that being said, they do some great research on Reddit. Like, I've looked through Reddit. There are some very smart traders on there, and they've kind of changed the dynamics of this market. So I'm giving Reddit a lot of credit here today. We'll give Reddit credit. And they have changed the dynamics of this market from this buying anything at any cost to looking through and doing due diligence and doing fundamental research again and finding diamonds in the rough. And GameStop was definitely a diamond in the rough. Roaring Kitty found the diamond in the rough. Is it make sense at 180? Probably not. But did it make sense at $4 or $5? You know, and me and Joel were on the other side of that. But you sit and you do the research. You're like, okay, well, maybe there is some value here. So they like the value. They like those types of names. There's a few other growth names in there too. They like the story stocks as well. But if you look, there's a predominant theme over there. And it was, you know, sure, there was a lot of value names on there.
Well, it's like everything else. Every message board has the same thing. If you can weed through the nonsense, there is bound to be diamonds in there. There's bound to be gems.
Yeah.
Research. If you
just research, it's all is working. You don't know who's on there. I mean, it's all, you don't know who these people are. I mean, there could be, you know, Renaissance, you know, capital.
There's some smart people in there, man. They could be.
You don't know, man. You don't know. You don't know who's in there. Not at all, man. I agree. And someone said we give Reddit a lot of heat on here. We got back and forth. I don't think so.
We give them love and hate. We give everyone love and hate.
I think maybe we use them as like a proxy for like the overall retail trader. But yeah, Joel's right. We go both ways. They really do.
I think they're smart.
We managed to piss everybody off. Really just one way or another. Really, you know, we're very versatile. We upset everybody.
And equally.
We try to upset everyone equally. It's like the South Park theme.
Exactly.
If you say something offside against everyone, it's not that offside.
We want everyone to hate us. I mean, basically, that's how we've improved our traffic over the past year.
All right. That's going to be a wrap for pre-market prep today. Please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. The show is always available as a podcast, right? It's on all the major podcast platforms, Spotify, iTunes, Google, et cetera, et cetera. It's also re-uploaded on YouTube, usually within the hour. But I think going forward, starting tomorrow, perhaps, we may make it a lot quicker for you to be able to find this show. But always available on Benzinga's YouTube channel as a podcast. Like I said, once again, smash the like button for Joel, for Dennis, for Nick. I got to get Dennis in the habit of saying goodbye when he leaves. He always just leaves without saying goodbye.
Okay.
Joel always says goodbye. Dennis never says goodbye.
Because he's rude and he wasn't raised right by his mom.
He's Canadian. I thought they're all polite.
He didn't say goodbye. But you know what? Everyone have a good day and I'm going to say goodbye. We'll see you at 3:30. I'll be on time today, Spencer. Okay. Ciao.
I appreciate it. If you're listening via podcast, please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. Everyone have a good rest of your day.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.